good day to you. It's Chris Walker and Jerry Hassan here for Kakubri Book Week podcasting, which is coming up very shortly, the 4th to the 10th of March, here in the beautiful harbour town of Kakubri. And today we're joined with Hugh Bryden, who is a Dumfries-based artist and publisher. Hugh, good morning.
Good morning.
It may be afternoon now. It doesn't matter because you'll be listening to this at some stage of the day. Hugh, really looking forward to your appearance with us on the 6th of March at the Kakubri Galleries, 11 a.m, which is going to be, I think, a talk about 20 plus years of publishing and pamphlets and poetry and a transatlantic collaboration.
Yes, it's going to be mainly about collaboration, actually. It's 25 years this year since I first started collaborating with poets and making poetry books. I started with Tom Powe, a writer from Dumfries, and Tom and I formed Cacafuego Press, and we had a launch of our first book at the Edinburgh Book Festival, which went really well, and then we had four other books and a number of little pamphlets and some little fun projects, and one of which ended up as an exhibition, a book that Tom wrote in 30 minutes and I illustrated in a year, called My Dad Was a Cowboy. It became an exhibition with Lizzie Ferry doing willow sculptures and
collaboration. I mean, Lizzie's just along the road here.
Lizzie and I have collaborated two or three times, along with Tom Powell and other exhibitions. So in 2005, I formed Roncadora Press, my own imprint, so that I could make one-off artist books as well as doing poetry pamphlets. And so for the last 25 years, I've made over 50 books. Some commissioned books, I've worked with writers groups to do anthologies, and the thing about the collaborations is it takes you places you wouldn't have gone,
both
mentally and physically.
But Hugh, tell us before we get into, like, you know, you're running your press and commissioning and writing and also the cultural production, tell us about you and how you got into writing, and because you were an art teacher for many years covering all Dumfries and Galway, so what brought you into writing yourself and being a creative force?
I think I was always involved with writers, even at school. I was illustrating poems for school magazines, and I've always loved poetry, and happened to have a lot of friends who are poets, so we began doing small projects, little pamphlets and so on. So Tom and I formalised that as Cacafuego. Cacafuego, we didn't want to be the Criffold or the Solway Press. We both had a love for Spain and Spanish connections, so Cacafuego was the sailor's name for a ship called Nuestra Señora de la Concepción that Francis Drake captured, a gold ship. Cacafuego, the polite translation is Spitfire, and it was because it was bristling with guns. So when I came to form my own press, Roncadora, I took another Spanish name, and Roncadora came about because Roncadora means she who snores. And my wife does not snore. I'm the snorer in our family. But we rented a villa in Spain that was built in the middle of a pine wood by a Dutch architect. An amazing building that had actually pine trees coming up through it. But it had two separate bedrooms, one of which was soundproofed because his wife was a snorer. So the house was called Roncadora. And I loved the name.
Yeah,
and
it's a beautiful name.
I made my logo as a little lady sleeping, and there's little Zeds in the curtains as they're moving. So that's how Roncadora came about. So I formed Roncadora in 2005, and it's led to lots of really interesting collaborations.
Yeah, and we were just talking before, but obviously the book trade, the book industry, as anyone who's a book lover knows, is it's an industry, it's got big players and so on. They have all sorts of pressures on smaller and unique publishers, but you've really carved out a place. So tell us how you've managed to do that.
Well, largely because I make, as well as the poetry pamphlets in limited editions, I'll make artist book versions. So that means I can tap into artist book fairs. There's about more and more. There used to be a half a dozen regular artist book fairs throughout the country, across the Baltic and in Bristol and in Leeds. But also I could do poetry book fairs. Stanza, the National Poetry Festival, have a very good poetry market. The Scottish Poetry Library have events where they have... So I can tie into that as well. Plus a couple of the books I've done, along with my son, who's a jazz musician. So I could tap into the book that I always think about as a most successful book. It was called 1957 Flying Scot, and it's about book all about a bicycle. Rab Wilson restored this bicycle, which was a built in Glasgow, 1957 Flying Scot, and he wrote a crown of sonnets, 15 sonnets about, and arrived on my doorstep with the bike and said, I'll let you have the bike for a fortnight. I want 15 linocut details of the bike to go along with 15 poems. And my son Ben was home from New York, and I said, do you fancy writing 15 tunes? So that's what happened. And it appealed to cycling people.
Yeah.
It appealed to poetry lovers, mm-hmm. and it appealed to jazz lovers. So we did an edition of 600 handmade ones, so we each got 200, and they've all gone. You know, it's been, but it was a great collaboration. We launched it in a bicycle shop in Stockbridge in Edinburgh and a bicycle shop in Brooklyn. So it was a fun project.
And this is the transatlantic sort of connection.
The transatlantic connection. Next year being the 20th year of Roncadora, I'm thinking about winding it down. I'm back into painting, and I want to concentrate on the painting. So a nice way to finish it would be with a big project. And because of Ben being in New York, he's been in New York the last 12 years, I've made contacts in New York, and I'm very friendly with Maddie Rosenberg, who runs Central Booking, which is a platform for artist books. It involves exhibitions and curation. And so Maddie and I got our heads together, and I'd always wanted to do something about Annan Sandstone, because it's fascinating. There's a myth in Annan that the Statue of Liberty sits on Annan Sandstone, which is a complete myth.
Okay.
But the true story is more interesting. Thousands of tons of Annan Sandstone were transported across to New York, and then on barges up to Albany, where the state capitol was being built. And they built a staircase there called the Million Dollar Staircase, it was called at the time. It cost more than $1 million in the 1890s. They spent 13 years building it, and they brought craftsmen, stonemasons initially, and then there were carvers from Lochmaben, Brykirk, Creaker, around the Annan area,
mm-hmm.
Coleshill Quarry. They of course had the Solway Viaduct at the time, so they built a railway spur and took the sandstone across the Solway to Silloth, and then ships across.
Yeah.
And this staircase is 444 steps. It's astonishing, the level of carving. There were over 500 carvers worked over the 13-year period it's been built. So a small number of them had been from Annan. And when the architect asked them to carve heads at the top of each of the columns, so there are 400 carved portrait heads. They originally were asked to carve American, famous Americans. They ran out at 78.
Uh-huh.
They'd done the presidents, they'd done the poets, they'd done the generals, they'd done the governors of New York.
Mm.
They went to the architect, and he said, as long as the heads are of this quality, I don't mind. So they started off by doing Robert Burns and William Shakespeare, and then they started doing each other. So there are portraits of the carvers and their families there. The unfortunate thing that happened was, this was completed in the 1890s, but in 1911, I think it was, certainly before the First World War, there was a devastating fire, which began in the library adjacent to the steps. And the library was destroyed, and the steps were blackened, and the windows smashed. The whole place was devastated by this fire. So all the records were lost of the names of the carvers, the contracts, and also the stairs were blackened. And it was about 30 years before they were restored. And in that time, I think the link with Annan was forgotten, and the myth about the Statue of Liberty came about. So I'm trying to find the names of the carvers. We're looking through the census and the records from that period.
Because we had if you remember, probably 10, maybe longer, 15 years ago, a symposium here in Kirkcudbright of carvers and sandstone,
mm-hmm.
And they're in the Harbour Square for about a week. I have in the garden a seashell that was gifted to us. Andy Campbell's sort of organising all. I'm pretty sure that was Annan Sandstone that they were carving.
The Coleshill Sandstone, is valued as one of the best carving sandstones, and it, when it reacts with the air, it becomes harder and can be polished. And the beauty of this is that it's an internal staircase, so it's never had the weather that ruins sandstone. But the whole project, it's really interesting. I had a professor of conservation from Amsterdam University emailed me last week because he's interested and was involved in the process they used for cleaning it. So he wants to come and see the project. So that's going to be in Kirkcudbright in the Mitchell Galleries in August.
Excellent.
We did the crowdfunder last year in August, and so the finished article. So.
Well, I hope you'll tell. Well, you're telling everybody on the podcast, but you'll tell everybody when they come to the actual live event.
The live event. What I'd like to do is just to be able to show people the books.
Yes.
And talk about the collaborations that have led up to this collaboration. I think that's the interesting part is where collaboration takes you. You know, it doesn't just take me out on a 1957 Flying Scot bicycle. It's taken me on journeys. Here,
even with your son and the jazz music. And what happened to those 15 tracks that he recorded? Where did they, the music?
The music's still there. The music is there as an independent CD and got lots of plays.
And did the transatlantic collaboration come through Ben, your son, when he moved out to New York?
I'd always, as a boy, I grew up in Eastrix.
Yeah.
And I was always on my bike. And I was up around Coarsill Quarry a lot. And Coarsill Quarry is, half of it's used as the town dump for Annan now. And the other half, and the really interesting thing is that its importance has really been forgotten in Annan. Last year, the quarry, which is now belongs to a Northumbrian firm, the quarry was opened and sandstone was taken out and shipped across to America to carve the first head for 120 years. And they carved a head of Ruth Bader Ginsburg, the judge.
Oh, yeah.
And that's been positioned up on the staircase. So that's big news in New York.
When did they open that quarry then to do that?
Beginning of 2022.
Really?
They took the stone out. Gosh. And it was just installed last summer, the head. It was carved and installed.
Oh, and that's sort of, I didn't know that.
No, I didn't.
I don't think it's appeared in the local paper even. It's an interesting little story which got national television coverage and New York Times did a big article about it.
Yeah, here.
Yeah.
That's, I think it's good to rediscover that heritage, the sandstone story.
Yeah.
So that's what prompted me, and the fact that Ben was in New York and the fact that I, through visiting him, I'd made New York contacts, that's what facilitated the project. So.
Good. Well, we're really looking forward to you coming. Jerry, is there final anything you want to ask you before we wind up the podcast?
Well,
because we don't want to give too much
away. I know,
for the
Hugh, when you had your exhibition in the galleries this year, I mean, one of the things that I just found fascinating is you develop these, I mean, multimedia is like a cliche, but you develop these things of like these multi-pronged projects that have these physical artistic projects. You had the one about the headstones, the gravestones, and I'm just wondering, what gave you the confidence and creativity to do things in such a kind of like, ambitious and, just where it touches like, history and pioneers and forgotten stories.
That one came up. I used to do lots and lots of projects in the schools which involved poets and writers. So I was used to doing projects that went in went off at tangents. And it was doing a project which was about gravestones.
Mm.
With children, local primary children, where they were taking it from a sea point of view, part of a project about the sea. And so we were going around graveyards looking to see if we could find anything that referred to sailors or people lost at sea. And we made that into a little pamphlet that was shaped like a church. And
that's
it would be great to do a model church and then have the gravestones as pages, the church's book and pages. So it grew out of that, and luckily Hugh McMillan came on board as editor, and he contacted, he sent out the request to the Scottish poets. But it was a really nice little idea to find an unsung Scottish hero and just write two stanzas about it.
I know, it's lovely. So, and anything, you know, as you're, I know you're coming to like the celebration of 20 years and 25 years next year, but is there any like creative project you haven't done, you would have loved to done or liked to do? What would be your like fantasy project you haven't done?
Well, I really enjoy working along with my son. And we haven't had a chance to do it. We've done two or three projects now. But I'd really like to do it. The transatlantic mix, which is touched on here, and we did another bend of the CD, which was jazz music and Scottish music, the influences back and forward across the Atlantic. I think that's one that's still mileage in. Mm. You know, I'd like to do that and just involve writers. But I also like there to be a strong physical sense, like this one,
yes.
The Sandstone Steps box.
Yes.
I like containing things in a nice box, and it gives me a chance to just put lots of things in there.
Yeah.
So this one, I'm doing so many liner cuts at the moment. Also, Ben's wanting to do vinyl as well as the music digitally. So it's going to be a busy 3 months. You know, I was talking to Ben at the weekend, and he's saying, "Would you like to hand print the covers for the vinyl?" You know, I said, "Well, okay." Yeah.
That's going to keep you busy.
Yeah.
Yep.
And we're so pleased that you're coming to Kakubri Book Week to talk about all the transatlantic collaboration, but to bring, and so that people can physically touch and feel some of these pamphlets.
Well, I'll bring a big suitcase of the Roncadoro books, and we can talk about how they're made, we can talk about how the collaborations work, and we can handle them. We can physically handle them.
Lovely.
Well, if you're listening and you want to come and see Hugh, he is appearing at Kakubri Galleries Wednesday the 6th of March at 11 a.m, and tickets are on sale at £6. Hugh, thank you so much for coming on and talking to us.
Thank you, a pleasure.
We're looking forward to seeing you on the 6th of March.
We could have covered, there's obviously so much we could have covered there, you know. And
Thanks, Jerry.